Welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, the Queen of Bounce, Big Frida. You may already be familiar with Big Frida's music and dancing. She headlined last year's online San Francisco Pride celebration and was the New Orleans host for Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve with Ryan Seacrest and served as Grand Marshal for this year's New Orleans Mardi Gras Parade at Home. She's performed widely with her own group and with Beyonce, Keisha, Drake, and Lizzo. She's known for putting twerking on the map and co-holds with 405 others a Guinness World Record for most people twerking simultaneously. I'd like to hear about that at some point. If you don't know what twerking is, I will try to have Big Frida give us an explanation later. You may be less familiar with Big Frida's life story and her activism off stage. As a teen, Freddie Ross Jr. was a choir boy singing gospel in one of the toughest neighborhoods in New Orleans. He and she confronted poverty, racism, homophobia, fat phobia, and gun violence, and later Hurricane Katrina on Big Frida's road to become ambassador of New Orleans Bounce, expanding queer visibility all along the way. She even had her own Ben & Jerry's ice cream flavor, Big Frida's Bouncin' Beignets. Big Frida is on tour now, promoting her new EP, BDE, Big Diva Energy, released in September. Hip-hop artist, author, reality TV star, and activist Big Frida is here to talk about her music, and of course we'll play some, and about her anti-gun violence documentary, Frida Got a Gun, and the recent paperback release of her memoir, Big Frida, God Save the Queen Diva. Welcome to Out in the Bay, Big Frida. Thanks for gracing us with your royal presence.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it so much.
So before we get into a heavy conversation, let's kick things off with some of your music, just so everyone's familiar. We'll start with Platinum.
Don't tell me about a bad time. You Platinum.
That's Big Frida's new single, Platinum. What's the inspiration behind this particular song?
Well, Platinum is a song of inspiration and hope. You know, it gives people an opportunity to know that even going through what we're going through, especially this COVID with the last year, that you still can shine bright and let your diamond shine regardless of what you're going through. And I recorded through the whole quarantine and made music. That's all I was able to really do. So I recorded and recorded and recorded. And I'm excited about the new project because it gave me an opportunity to sit back, look at things in a different view, come up with some really creative and catchy music. And I'm excited, you know, and hopefully Platinum goes platinum.
Frida, tell us about bounce. What is bounce music?
Well, bounce music is New Orleans. It is a subgenre of hip-hop. It's been a New Orleans-based music for over 30-plus years. When I define bounce music, I define it as up-tempo, heavy-bass, call-and-respond type music. Has a lot to deal with the ass shaking and moving of the body parts. And it's a fun music. Once you put it on, the party's going to start twerking. Oh, yes.
You know, it's funny because a lot of people I know like can't stand rap music, but they hear some of your music or other bounce music and they go, oh, man, this is so fun. Like you said, you just want to shake your booty and everything else.
Yeah, it's a fun music, you know, and I love what I do. I've been doing it for a long time now, but I enjoy what I do. And, you know, so I'm making them bounce.
When and how did you learn about bounce music? How were you exposed to it?
Well, I mean, growing up in New Orleans, I was exposed to it. I grew up listening to it as a kid, went to middle school dances and high school dances where the music was played all throughout the neighborhoods, you know, familiar with most of the pioneers that started in the bounce culture, from DJ Jubilee to DJ Jimmy to Mia X to Partners in Crime, Cheeky Black, Miss T, and so forth and so forth, are some of the great pioneers who have paved the way for me even to be in this position. So I grew up listening to it, and it's been a big part of New Orleans culture for such a long time.
So eighth grade was a big year for you, according to your book, not just because the first bounce song came out, at least that your exposure to it, but you also came out to your mom, Ms. V, on your 13th birthday. What was that experience like for you? Were you worried about it, and how did she respond?
Well, I was very nervous about it, of course, about to tell my mom, you know, the decision that I had made that I was comfortable with. And when I decided to tell her at my birthday party, I sit her on my lap while all of my friends were there and to give me some support. And my mama said that she already had knew and that she was going to love me regardless. And we talked about it the next day. And the next morning, we cried together. We laughed together. And from that day forward, my mom just was my biggest cheerleader and my biggest supporter. She had my back regardless of who I wanted to be, what I wanted to be. She supported me in every direction and every way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read in your book that how she not only helped you, kept your back, but also your friend Eddie. And when he finally came out, he had to leave his parents' house because they threw him out.
Yeah, Eddie had went through a lot. And my mom was definitely a backbone for a lot of us, especially me being the one that she accepted, so she accepted my friends and she supported them and tried to be a mother figure for them as well.
You also write in your book, Big Frida, God Save the Queen Diva, about sexuality in New Orleans not being like other places in the world. Straight boys sleep with men, and it's not just down low or bisexuality. Some got girlfriends, some don't. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, it's just the way that it has been in New Orleans, the way that I saw it, the way that I was raised. And so it has been different than any other place I have been in the world. I see a lot of times when I go to different cities, you might see a gay couple holding hands. And a lot of times you don't see that here in New Orleans. You just see people really being down low and sneaking around, you know, the straight guy with the girlfriend messing with the gay guy. And, you know, as time has evolved and things have gotten better over years, you see it now visibly. But back then it was very much hush hush. Everything was on a down low. Everything was kept a secret. You had to sneak around with who you wanted to sleep with or who you were loving.
How do you think your presence in the hip hop scene has changed how LGBTQ people are viewed, especially in the music world?
Well, I think it's all about the way that you carry yourself. You know, I think that people have been able to view me as being open and being myself and living in my truth. And I think that has been a big role here in New Orleans, because when I started to step outside of my comfort zone and to be who I wanted to be, I also had goals and wishes to accomplish that, you know, New Orleans would come together and I would be the gay guy that everybody could come up to and feel comfortable and respect and not feel like they were threatened by my sexuality. So I worked hard at bringing people together and making people feel comfortable and being accepted, being seen or talking to a gay guy. I was this tall, big kid, oversized and overweight, still trying to figure out my path, but also still had goals and dreams inside the back of my mind of bringing New Orleans together and making it a better and safer place for all of us gay guys.
Mm-hmm. In the book, you talk about singing gospel in the church in your neighborhood, and sounds like it was a part of you starting to really find yourself in terms of, you know, having a group that you were having fun with and finding out about singing and that you had talent for that. Tell us a little bit more about that experience.
Yeah, my safe haven. You know, one of my friends in the neighborhood, she invited me to her church home one Sunday And I decided to go. And when I did, I fell in love with the church. I fell in love with the people. They accepted me and welcomed me with open arms. So this gave me an opportunity to do something different that I wasn't doing and to get outside of my neighborhood and step into a new world. And this was a world that I loved. And this was a world that I, you know, gave a lot to and went every Sunday to church, every Sunday morning to Sunday school, every Saturday to choir rehearsal. And as time went on, I got deeper and deeper into the music. I became a choir director. I, you know, sung with many other choirs here in New Orleans. I started to travel the world with the choir each year as we were going to have choir competitions and so forth. I also became the choir director at my high school and, you know, sung there. So this was an opportunity for me to step into something that I love to do and enjoy what I love to do. And it became a big part of my life. And that's what I was known for gospel music, hitting high notes all down the hallways at high school, all in my neighborhood singing. You know, people could hear me coming from around the corner singing a church song back then, because that's what I love to do. And yeah, it has carried me for such a long time. That's what I was known for, choir boy.
Well, you know, it's funny. There's a scene in the documentary, I recall, that you're talking about, you know, when you were younger, as a little more of a little kid, maybe early teens, and you were getting picked on all the time. But then when you started to sing, you would, you know, walk or run through the neighborhood and singing, and all of a sudden people were treating you with more respect.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, I think singing gave me power to feel comfortable in my own skin, to live in my truth, and also be able to be expressive and be who I wanted to be. I always was loud and common. And so this singing, it played right into part. And I was able to use something more on a positive note that kept me to be myself, but also didn't have people looking at me crazy because I was singing gospel music.
I want to move into talking a little bit about the documentary, which is about gun violence. And street violence has really taken its toll on New Orleans and on you personally. You were shot yourself in 2004, I believe, and your brother was murdered just a couple of years ago, 2018, right?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about those two events. I mean, first of all, your shooting, maybe that's the place to start. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, you know, unfortunate situation happened that, you know, I was not ever thought would have happened. And dropping a friend off one night after the club and then getting into a situation where I wind up being shot and not knowing why, what was the reason, you know, what was the motive behind it. It was very scary. It made me terrified to live in New Orleans. It made me terrified to want to come outside until, you know, my mom just kept fighting with me every day, saying that you won't be captivated in your own house and in your own city, and that you need to get you some protection and you need to get back out there and you need to start living your life. And so one day at a time was that process. And I took it one step at a time. It took me a moment to come out of my shell of being terrified and scared. And thanks to my mom, she was my biggest cheerleader and my biggest strength. She made me come out of that house and we started to go do things together. And then I started to feel back some type of normalcy, you know, as things went on. But it was just a very scary event, you know, just thinking, dropping somebody off and then winding up waking up in the hospital and not really knowing the reason why. Yeah, so that was very scary, you know, having to deal with that. I'm still dealing with that each day that I wake up because the bullet is still in my arm. I was shot twice. I still have lots of pains and ache in my arm, especially when the weather climate changes and it get cold. The arms start to stiff up a whole lot. But I'm grateful to still be here and be able to tell you about all of it. And I'm thankful.
Yes, and unfortunately, your brother is not was not so lucky, if I can use that word.
Yeah, unfortunately, I lost my brother in 2018 due to gun violence here in New Orleans. Another reason, New Orleans have been a tough layers of skin with me, with all the things and tragedies and losses that I have seen. But my brother, I wanted to make sure that it was not in vain and that I do something for a greater cause and a greater purpose so that another family or another person may not have to go through exactly what we went through and what my family went through. So this documentary is, you know, an opportunity to put some things out there to let people know some of the things that we need to change in our everyday life systems and growing up and watching our youth and the things we do around them, the things we say around them, the type of weapons we have around them. All of this is very important. And this documentary is focused on the things that we need to do in New Orleans and try to get some of our local and national leaders' attention of what effect does guns really have on people and their families and your community and all, you know, all together. And so that's why I did this documentary. It was very hard for me to do it. It was very deep, being that I had to put myself a part of it. My brother, you know, my family was very involved with it. But once again, I'm grateful for the opportunity to get the message out there and hopefully that my brother's debt will not be in vain and that we can save some other child or some other adult who may be experiencing things that they should not be experiencing or even having to deal with guns and in general, you know?
Okay, we're going to play a short clip from the documentary. The name of the documentary is Frida Got a Gun. It starts with you talking with a young man in his early teens. I think his name is Devin, who's getting in some trouble. So let's just play that, and then we'll talk about it a little bit when we come out.
You are so young to be carrying a gun, to be having charges, you know, to be even in those situations. Y'all are still in middle school.
I was thinking about carrying a gun when my dad died, but I didn't. But when somebody tried to shoot at me, then I just felt that I needed protection. Because you can't always miss my bullet. I just think New Orleans will never change. We one of the most dangerous cities, other than Chirac.
Growing up on Josephine, you know, right in the Third Ward, I saw it all. My cousin was killed over a 10-speed bike. So I saw all of this growing up as a kid as well. If I come from seeing all the same things that y'all see now and doing something different and making a change, you can do it as well. It's really sad. Things have not got better. Things have got much worse. It was like they were numb to the situation and they was expecting it. I probably saw that a little bit more in my high school days, but these kids are seeing it in elementary and in middle school. Up uptown on Josephine Street. We saw a lot. We heard a lot. It was a struggle growing up in the neighborhood that I grew up in. We saw poverty. We saw drugs. We saw killings. We also had some fun times.
That's a clip from Frida Got a Gun, the documentary that my guest Big Frida was in last year. Big Frida, who is that playing in that scene at the end? We're hearing some, you're talking about that we had a lot of fun on Josephine Street, even though it was a, you know, could be a dangerous neighborhood. Who is that playing there?
Yeah, that's me. Ain't no place like New Orleans. They go up when we go down. Yeah, that is definitely, that's Third Ward Bounce. Exactly explaining where I grew up at and about my neighborhood and, you know, what made me become into this music game and the people who have carried me. So, yeah, that song is a big part of my life and of my story, exactly where I grew up in the Third Ward of New Orleans.
A lot of people trying to shake like Eddie. When you twinkle and you wiggle and you slap for daddy. Oh. Walking down the streets with a drink in my hand. Like, I don't give a... It's New Orleans, man. We do it for the N. Oh, come on, come on. We do it for the 504. Oh. We do it for the bounce. We bring it out of house. We do it for the N. Oh, lady.
Ain't no place like New Orleans.
You're hearing Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen speaking with the queen of bounce, Big Frida. We're talking about her recent documentary, Frida Got a Gun, and the paperback release of her memoir, Big Frida, God Save the Queen Diva. By the way, the name, the title of the documentary, Frida Got a Gun, what's behind the title? It implies that you have a gun. Is it changing the power dynamic? What?
Well, I mean, you know, between me and the producers, you know, we wanted it to be out there and we wanted it to be bold and to get people attention. And I think the title definitely got a lot of people's attention. And they were interested in what exactly does Frida Got a Gun mean. And, you know, I used to have a gun. I don't carry a gun any longer. I am trying to get rid of guns now because I've saw so much tragedy and violence in my life that has been affected by guns.
Okay. We'll move on to more happy stuff in a minute. But let me, the last thing I want to ask you about, you know, New Orleans has gone through so much. Hurricane Katrina, its aftermath, now COVID. And you were actually, you were rescued from the roof of your house with four of your family members during Hurricane Katrina, right?
It was just a tragedy. I mean, it was an experience that I will never forget. It also was a life learned lesson of that material things don't mean anything, you know, when you are in survival mode and fighting for your life. And yeah, Katrina definitely changed all of our lives and made us learn to appreciate life even more. And that material things don't really mean anything, you know, long as we are able to still be able to be here and to restart our lives and love each other, that's the most important. And Katrina definitely taught me a lot.
How's New Orleans doing now? I mean, it's 15 years from Katrina, but now there's COVID. Generally speaking, do you feel like it's in a better place or is it, you know?
Yeah, we're definitely in a better place. I think that New Orleans has definitely grown. I think that Katrina happened for a reason for certain things to change here in New Orleans and change the course of things. So I think we're definitely in a better place. It's not like before pre-Katrina. I think it was just a lot more community and a lot more love in the city. And Katrina has separated a lot of different people and displaced us all around the world. But I think it also gave some people opportunities to be able to change their life and their surroundings and what they were so used to and give them, you know, a new way of life. So it was a blessing and a curse for many of us. And hopefully that you took your curse and turned it into a blessing.
You're hearing a rebroadcast from March before Hurricane Ida struck in late August. So 2020, you had planned to be on tour with Keisha, but of course that was canceled because of COVID. I'm curious how you have dealt with and evolved and done some other things during this pandemic that, you know, you got the Friday Night Shakedowns, gospel brunch and weekly garden cookouts. What's been going on that's helped you maintain some sanity and have some fun in the past year?
Well, lots of prayer, because it has been a rough year. Yeah, I was really excited to go on tour with Kesha. You know, things happened that were out of our control, you know, on a much larger scale. You know, the whole world was affected by this. And I'm just taking it one day at a time. I'm grateful to still be here. I've had COVID. I'm glad to still be here and got through it. And that's the most important thing, because I could always go back to work whenever things get back to normal. But the most important thing that I stay healthy and stay safe. And when the world opens back up, I'll be making them shake some more ass.
Okay, good.
This interview first aired in March. Big Frida is on tour now, promoting her new EP, Big Diva Energy.
Before I read the credits, just tell us a little bit about twerking. How do you describe it to somebody who maybe hasn't seen it?
Well, twerking, it depends on how you like to twerk, first of all, because everybody has just a little different twerk. But the twerking is usually hands on your knees, arching your back, and you make your ass go up and down. You know, it's what you see everywhere. New Orleans, we don't call it twerking. We call it shaking, wiggling, wobbling, popping, you know, busting open, bending over. We give it a little bit of everything. But twerking will probably be the last word. Yeah, twerking probably will be the last word in our vocabulary.
I've gotten this thing, you have to jiggle your butt more. You have to jiggle each cheek back and forth. So it's not that specific. It's just like working it.
Yeah, really, you know, and that's why people love me so much, because I give people the opportunity to dance and twerk however they feel empowered on the dance floor and express themselves. And it's not no judge zone. It's a judge-free zone when they come on a Frida stage or into a Frida room. And no matter how you twerk, it could be the worst twerk or it can be the best twerk, we still gonna all twerk and have a good time together.
Fantastic. Big Frida, thank you so much for your music, for your activism, and for sharing your time here with us out in the Bay.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So probably instead of going out with our usual theme music, we'll go with karaoke, which is one of your big hits.
It's not one of my biggest, but it's a big one. And this is karaoke featuring Lizzo.
Dun, dun, dun. Showtime. Time to shine. Showtime. Yo, time. Got a bevy of bad broads with ankle monitor. They hit her with bandos. They cook the pop off. Give a fuck about landlord when we some outlaws. Baby, you can get Randolph or knock off. Ooh, you better. Ooh.
That's this week's Out in the Bay. My guest was Big Frida, the Queen of Bounce, and co-author with Nicole Balin of her autobiography, Big Frida, God Save the Queen Diva. It's a fun book, by the way. It's an easy read. To learn more about Big Frida, check out our website, outinthebay.org, where we'll post links about Frida, her book, her documentary, and the new single, Platinum. That's outinthebay.org, where you can also hear this show and past shows and share them with friends and sign up for our weekly email newsletter and subscribe to Out in the Bay via Stitcher and Apple Podcasts. Please also consider a donation. We're a totally independent production. We receive no funding from NPR nor the radio stations that air Out in the Bay. We'd love to keep bringing queer air to your ears. Your contributions will help. That's outinthebay.org. Comments also help. No cash involved. Are you out there? Please let us know. Send comments from raves to constructive criticism to outinthebaysf@gmail.com. That's outinthebaysf@gmail.com. This week's show is produced by Kendra Klang and edited by Porfirio Rangel. Want to join our team? Email us at outinthebaysf@gmail.com. Stay safe, stay healthy. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for joining us out in the Bay.
Business day.